Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Well, hello everyone. This is Sean Murray from the New Cyber Frontier. We have a great guest today, Dr. Mansoor Haseeb, Program Chair for the Graduate Cybersecurity Technology at University of Maryland, Maryland College. Dr. Mansoor and I actually go back here a couple of years. Mansoor is actually my boss at University of Maryland, and team leader.
I'm not a boss, right?
Well, welcome, Mansoor. It's great to have you on the program, and you know, we'd like to hear a little bit about your background, and you know, we're going to have a great conversation of you know, as a practitioner to academic. How you made that transition, those things that you think are really important in our industry right now. And I'd love to start off listening to, you know, what is your background? Tell the listeners who you are and you know, what your background is.
Sure. So thank you very much, Sean, for having me. My background is essentially a practitioner scholar. I spent about 30 plus years practicing in the industry in a variety of sectors and biotechnology, healthcare, energy, and education. And then approximately the last 6 years or so, I've been in academia. The first 3 years, I kind of figured out, hey, is this where I really want to be? Because it's a big change. And so for the last 3 years, I've been program chair in this particular role. And I think that particular distinction that I mentioned about being boss versus leader, I think it's a very important distinction, because that's kind of what one of the things that kind of led me to come to academia to do this, because I felt like leadership was such an important aspect of cybersecurity that we really needed to teach people about leadership, because it's not the same as management. Too many schools confuse management with leadership. What they've done is change the literature of management into leadership, and now they're calling it leadership, so that's confusing to people even more.
You know, one of the things that led me, you reached out a couple years ago and asked me to join your program.
Right.
When we had that conversation, it's one of those unique things that University of Maryland, University College brings to the table. The graduate program itself, we don't provide legacy information, and the content is actually developed by practitioners who are also academics, so that the contributions to students are what they should expect to experience when they get back to their job. And there's a cyber range where they can actually practice the concepts that we introduce to them. You know, why is it so much better than some of what the competitors are doing out there?
Yeah, so this is a very key question. I'm glad you asked it. And then you, as a faculty member in our program, have had the first-hand experience of actually experiencing this. As you saw, one of the things that we do is we approach cybersecurity from a multidisciplinary angle. A lot of programs are pure computer science or technology-oriented, but we have a very business focus, and we're very interdisciplinary. So at University of Maryland, University College, for example, you can have a bachelor's degree in any field, and you can enter our program. Yes, there are technology components, but if you have no technology background, we then have preparatory courses for you to take at a very low cost and lower investment time to prepare you for that. So we are getting people from a variety of disciplines, and that's what society is composed of, because if you think about the issues, cybersecurity isn't for just the technologies, it is for everybody. Every organization of every type needs to be embracing this discipline and using this discipline to really power their organization forward. So that is the big distinction. The other distinction is that when a program is created by pure academics who have never worked in the field, then those projects are not likely to be reality-based. Our projects are smaller scale versions of real things that people are going, so our graduates are going to face in the industry. So the beautiful thing, as you saw, is that all these artifacts that they're building in their classes, the projects that they're completing in the classes, they can actually take it to a job interview. And when people say, can you do a penetration test? Our students can say, well, not only can I do it, I had to do it in class and I had to develop a whole report around it, because just doing the test is not enough, right? Because you have to develop that whole report and what are you proposing? So having that business mindset. We also, as you noticed, we saw, we force people to work in teams and have that interdisciplinary discussion where people from variety of levels of experience and expertise, which is what you're going to find in the real workplace, right? Because everybody's not an expert. Some are more experienced than others, and they're yet coming together from a variety of perspectives.
And they're allowed to, they're able to actually pool their knowledge together at various disciplines and then a project. So let's come back to that conversation. We're going to right now for our sponsor.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
New Cyber Frontier, our special guest today is Dr. Mansoor Haseeb, the program chair for the Graduate Cybersecurity Technology for University of Maryland, University College. Mansoor and I have been working together as teammates for the last few years, and he is our team leader. He was discussing the contributions that practitioners who have become academics can make. And one of the things that you hit on that I'd like to hit on, expound a little bit further, you know, when you're a professor teaching a class, you're not just that sole dedicated instructor. All the instructors that are part of your program collaborate. We all work together. An update in the community, we're able to you provide the flexibility to introduce that into the program in real time or within, you know, a semester, whereas in traditional academic programs, it may take a year or two, and by then it's onto something new. How important do you think that is, you know, when we take a look at, you know, being able to be that flexible and adaptable?
Well, that's incredibly important. So that was actually one of the biggest reasons why we recently won two awards. You're probably aware of that, that back-to-back 2018 and 2019, we won the award for Best Cybersecurity Higher Education Program in the USA. And one of the big things was that we were also a Jeopardy question, because one of the things we eliminated is textbooks. Because one of the things about textbooks is this two-year edit cycle. Well, we don't have textbooks. What we have are curated resources that we put in the classrooms, and we can do that every term. If we want to change something every term, sometimes we can even change it just before the term starts. For example, NIST had an update recently, and we were able to provide the updated thing in the classroom. The other thing is that notice that you are practitioner scholars teaching. So what you can do is after the student submits the first time, you can then coach the student and say, here's where you went wrong, and this project required, say, the 15 elements, but you are a little weak on these five, but you can coach and provide that feedback from a practitioner point of view as to what they would really be able to do and why they would do that. that thing is unbelievably valuable. So that's one of the strengths of this program, because you also not only bring that professional perspective, but you're also attending conferences. You're plugged into the community. You know what's happening. You know what the students will need to do to be successful. So you can be the mentors, you can be their guides, and also point out things. I mean, so that's invaluable. Plus, the other thing is you are teaching because of your passion. You don't really need to teach. You're not teaching it for the money part. The money part is just a good thing, but you're really teaching because you want to give back that and build the next generation. And kind of that is also the main reason why I came to academia. Is because I really, right now, at this stage of my life, I want to build the next generation. And I believe you are in the same position. And that's why the faculty relationship is working out so well.
Yeah, and you know, I reflect back on when I went through my doctoral program in computer science and some of the wisdom I had, the program that I went through at a different university, you know, and the feedback from the dean was, well, you know, why don't you come and join us and contribute? And I found it very rewarding, very passionate, along with our other colleagues. And that brings right back to, especially in the graduate program, most students are practitioners at some level, right? And so we
have that
leadership aspect, not just, you know, between us as faculty members, but also as mentors. You mentioned that word mentor. So from security or a leadership aspect, how important is that for our student body when we focus on graduate students?
Yeah, so leadership is ultra important because, as you know, as being a cybersecurity professional, one of the key elements of cybersecurity is innovation. And innovation is primarily done by people. And innovation can be helter-skelter if there isn't leadership that kind of channels that energy and innovation towards a business purpose, right? Because so if you think about how is leadership and innovation need to work in cybersecurity? One good example that I often use is highway. We are all driving different cars at sometimes different speeds, but with the highway has lanes and some rules for us to follow so that we don't have an accident. So in the same way, leadership basically provides those lanes and channels of engagement so that the ultimate innovation and all that is towards a business goal. Because at the end of the day, you don't want to do innovation helter-skelter. Plus, you also need to know that a lot of the innovation, as a matter of fact, is not going to work out, right? But you still need to invest in that innovation. You still need to invest in that people. And so the leadership aspect, and on a management, on the other hand, is totally different, right? Management is more interested in the process, whereas leadership is more interested in the outcome. Process may be important, but not so important that you're so sold to the process. But in management, what are you trying to do? You're trying to basically enforce the process because you have an assembly line kind of environment. But cybersecurity is never an assembly line kind of environment. We're always learning, always doing new things. So the whole idea of leadership is to make sure that your people don't ever feel stifled, right? And that you're also bringing in different kinds of people with different kinds of thinking so that you get a very holistic. And the more holistic you are, the more risk averse or more risk optimized your decision will be, right? So for example, if you have one brain looking at a particular problem, well, the solution might have a lot of risk. If you have 10 brains looking at that same problem and you have hashed out that problem, chances are that final result is going to be a little bit better.
Absolutely, contributions of many. And so this is actually a really good segue with the discussion. We're actually talking about all of those different experiences, those different levels, those different people, the contributions they make. That leads into the culture. So how would you define the culture of information and cybersecurity, being that it's, you know, we talk about leadership and innovation and you know, there is the management component. How important is culture?
Culture is ultra important because at the end of the day, cybersecurity is defined by the behavior of the people in the organization, and culture governs behavior all the time. So this is an area of work that I've done a lot of research on. Culture was one of the things that I learned very early in my career when I was at a nuclear power plant. And the culture of the plant was nuclear plant safety, so human safety, safety of lives. So everything revolved around that culture. And that's also where I understood this whole business of true leadership through empowerment. What did that mean? Well, let us say that I'm a supervisor and I tell somebody to do something. And the person says, well, that particular thing that you just asked me to do is likely to reduce the safety of the plant. Guess what? That particular challenge should be accepted. And I should not be able to, so in the nuclear power plant, I as a supervisor could not fire a person who might challenge my order if the person believed that the plant safety would be compromised. So
it makes sense.
Yeah. So this is a key element, I think, in cybersecurity also. Like, you don't want to stifle your people and penalize them for giving you suggestions. Even if you as a supervisor are going wrong, you want your people to be able to tell you. You don't want your teammate to go up, fall off the cliff. So one of the things that was so funny, when I came for the job interview for this particular job in my program, one of the questions that I was asked during the job interview was that, what is so special about you that we should hire you? I said, I will never knowingly let any of my team members fail. So if I see you doing something wrong, I will point it out. If you still want to go ahead and do it, that's up to you. But I, as a team member, will never knowingly let you fail.
Well, and I can attest to that myself. You know, we're going to come back. This is Sean Reed, Cyber Frontier. We're with Dr. Mansoor Hasib. We're going to break for our sponsor. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back everyone to the new Cyber Frontier. This is Sean Murray. Our special guest today is Dr. Mansoor Hasib. He's the program chair for the Graduate Cybersecurity Technology at University of Maryland, University College. Yeah, your program has been recognized at the college now for the last couple of years. And I know, you know, we talk about practitioners contributing not just to the academic piece, but to the various ecosystem for mm-hmm. information technology and information or cybersecurity. So, you know, your folks that you know you lead, mm-hmm. what contributions are they making outside of the academic field that actually contributes to the success of your program?
Oh my God, tremendous! Look at what you're doing right now, right? You're engaging in this discussion,
right?
Yeah. Right. So these kinds of things are happening all the time. Our practitioner scholars are engaged in a whole variety of sectors. I couldn't even name them all because I have about 120 members in my faculty team, and they are with defense contractors. They're with other government agencies or private sector, healthcare, you name it. So the beautiful thing is that our students can, if let's say they want to mentor in the healthcare sector, well, we might be able to find them a mentor in the healthcare sector who is a practitioner within us. And so that is one thing. We can also, these people can also create presentation opportunities for students. So I've done that with some of my mentees. For example, one of my mentees, her interest is in drone cybersecurity. And that's kind of one of the another things that I also encourage these people to do is to focus on a passion, because the field is so broad that we can, from our own success point of view, coach others on how to determine their success. Because if you try to be an expert in everything, that's never going to work, right? So just like I focused on the leadership, people, culture aspects, I helped them focus on those things. So one of the things that I created was opportunities for them to present and also coach them on how to write that presentation so that hopefully it'll get accepted. And so the nice thing is that happened. So for example, there's an ISC Square Secure Summit DC coming up in April. And one of the faculty members that I coached and one of my former students who has already graduated, they're presenting there. So these are all kinds of things that by being plugged into the industry and the practice, we can create opportunities for our students also.
Yeah, and it's kind of rewarding. Every once in a while, I'll get a student will reach out to me, like, you know, I was at the RSA conference, and did you present there? And
right.
You know, and there so it's good for them. It provides them additional value that, you know, we're not just academics, right. Which is an important aspect of it, but we're practitioners and we're contributing to the ecosystem. So one of the things I'd like to talk about when moving away from culture, mm-hmm. and talking about the very, you hit on a little bit, there's so mm-hmm. many different disciplines when it comes to cybersecurity. I look right. from an analogy of a med school student. So you go to school mm-hmm. 8 years,
yes.
You graduate, and now you're a physician. What is it that yes. you do now, right? Do you want to be OBGYN on college?
Correct.
All right. So it's the same thing in cybersecurity. There's so many different disciplines. Right. You hit on that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. So this is another interesting thing. One of the reasons some people often ask us, why at our university do we have so many different tracks for even our Master of Science program? Because in many other schools, there's only one track for the master's program. Well, we decided that the field is so vast and so broad that if we had a single master's degree, we wouldn't be able to cover it to enough depth. So that's why we did the cybersecurity technology program, which is a little bit of everything, but technology architecture is one of the biggest focuses there. But we also have a management and policy track, which primarily deals with the legal aspects, the regulatory aspects, how to develop policy aspects. And then we have another amazing program, which is the forensics program and cyber investigation, because that's a huge, huge field. Because right now, for example, in any accounting or healthcare or whatever, that you got fraud and you got forensics going on. So digital forensics is huge. So this is one of the things that has happened. And what we're allowing is at least these three tracks. Now we're also coming up with a fourth track that hopefully might get launched in the fall. And that is the offensive and defensive cybersecurity, which is the weapons aspects of cybersecurity, because as you know, right now we're talking about cyber weapons too.
Sure.
Absolutely. And it is not possible to do all of these things in a single track. So that's why the master's degrees were split up into these four tracks, so we could go deeper into each of these tracks and still give people a broad perspective, but also allow them to focus a little bit so that it becomes better for them when they hit the job market.
You know, a lot of the tie-ins to the curriculum are project-based, project based mm-hmm. on real world scenarios, something mm-hmm. that a student could expect to actually have a challenge with. And so right. the writing aspect of it, a research aspect to it, and then there's the practitioner aspect of it, where in some instances you may be presenting to a board of directors. And we how at that level. And so why is that important for our graduate students to be able to tie all that together into an ability to present to somebody that's higher up in their organization?
So once again, you hit upon a key aspect of the program. One of the things that I myself look at my own career and you look at your own career, it is not important to just know the thing. It is more important to not only know, but also figure out explaining what to do to a variety of constituents, because you've got your technical team that you might need to convince. You might need to convince the board of directors. You might need to convince the CEO, the CFO, all of these things. So you need to be very good at communicating to a variety of audiences, and therefore your written communications, your verbal communications, your ability to write an executive summary becomes very important. And this is also why the practitioner, scholar, coach of people like you and me who have worked in the field, who have done those things, can help people develop an executive summary, because a lot of people don't know what an executive summary is.
Right.
A pure academic might think an abstract is an executive summary, but it may or may not be. So it is very powerful to have practitioner scholars coach the students into this. And then the presentations, you've seen that we do in-class presentations or online presentations, but once again, that communication, being able to talk to normal people and non-practitioners in a language that they can understand is also very important, right?
Really, and ties back to that culture aspect that we talked about. I know in coaching some of our students, it's very difficult. There's so much knowledge they want to put on 100 slides when only two or three is all you need.
Right. There you go.
Well, right. Great. So, yeah, one of the things we haven't hit on is, you know, how does Mansoor Haseeb move from a practitioner of 30 years of that into academia? How did that transition happen? At what point did you realize that's what you wanted to do?
Another great question. So I think life kind of told me, this is one of the things that I also have told my students and all that life will sometimes give you cues. So what happened was in 2010, all of a sudden, one of the companies where I was a CIO shut down, right? Whole executive team gets laid off. So I said, okay, this is life telling me I need to be doing something different. So instead of just looking for the next opportunity, I decided to do some soul searching. I took some time off, traveled, went to some conferences. And that's when I also saw that, oh my God, now there is a doctoral degree in the field that I'm in the field that I've practiced for 30 years. Because I didn't want to do a doctoral degree in computer science. I mean, that because I don't feel cybersecurity is computer science. We have use for computer scientists. A lot of computer scientists practice in the field, but cybersecurity isn't computer science. So I didn't want to do that. When I found this, I was like, wow. So then I found out the entrance requirements. I said, all right, do you have all these crazy requirements to get in? I found out, no, if you have a CISSP, it was almost a shoo-in, and I had a CISSP at that time, right? So they said, yeah, you already have the leadership and the technical know-how to get in, and you have a master's degree. So that I solved was the first cue. So I was able to finish the doctoral program, and that's when I started even noticing a change in my own brain, that I was beginning to think differently, talk differently, write differently. And I felt like now I was ready to mentor others into the field. And that's when I said, okay, so now that I have the doctoral degree, let me see if I will enjoy it. So I wanted to adjunct teaching first and saw how I would do in that. And that I really, really loved. I mean, I've always enjoyed teaching. And just being able to see that, yes, my contribution was helping others. So it gave me a very good warm and fuzzy feeling, I would say that sometimes life gives you two kinds of rewards, right? The monetary rewards and the non-monetary rewards. And personally, I've always been energized more by the non-monetary rewards of seeing people succeed. And I feel that that's usually a very key component of any job. And I felt like I was getting a lot of that. And so that's, after 2-3 years of doing that, I started looking for full-time opportunities. And then this opportunity came up, and it looked like the right fit because of the way I also wanted to do things at scale. I didn't want to teach where my impact was going to be, say, 20 students, because I felt like I want to be able to impact thousands of students. So this program, where in my program we have about 4,000 students, and we're growing. So I feel like that scale just suits my personality type also in being in trying to make a contribution at a larger scale. And I'm hoping that my graduates would also go out and then have that ripple effect that would also help more organizations. So I think that's how I made the transition. I mean, and I basically have been full-time at it now a little over 3 years, and I love it, absolutely love it.
You know, no regrets. I'm very passionate. I joined your team a couple years ago. Absolutely enjoy working in the program with the students, with the other faculty members, continuing to set the bar that much higher. So that brings us to the next topic. Where are we in 3 to 5 years? Where are you? Where's the program?
Well, I would love to start a doctoral program if that ever could be possible, because I think that the way knowledge is going and the way we need to really build, we need to do two things in the field. Number one, we need more professors to be able to teach this discipline properly. So I think that in this field, we're going to need a lot more doctoral programs. I don't know who's going to do it. I would love to do it. And so that's one. Number two is that the field will need a lot of data research, because you look at even things like data logs. Right now, it's not possible. Yes, artificial intelligence and all of that is helping to sift through these logs and make sense of it, but you still need researchers to figure out what new knowledge we can derive from all this data that we're collecting all over the place. So data scientists and more scholars to teach the profession, I believe, are going to be ultra important in the next 3 to 5 years. And we need to, even if we don't do it right away, we need to set ourselves to do that as quickly as possible. And I feel like the doctoral programs will be a key thing in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, these are great points, especially on the data scientists. There's so much data being produced, and we don't even know what to do with it all. But a data scientist, where they focus on the analytic process of turning data into information, so the consumers can make value of the data. The significant contribution that I keep hearing in my circles as well, and a doctoral program that is modeled after what we've been able to accomplish in our graduate cybersecurity technology program. Of course, I think that would just sell itself, especially for those that have gone through the graduate program. Well, Mansoor Haseeb has been our guest today on the New Cyber Frontier. We do appreciate you joining us and sharing your perspective on the academia as it cross matrix with the model. We appreciate your contributions today. Thank you for joining us on the New Cyber.
Thank you very much for having me, and I really appreciated talking with you, Sean. Thank you.
All right, you have a great day, sir.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.